Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Thinking come from this whole idea of anti-immigration, anti-multiculturalism, and what they've been describing as all anti-Muslim thinking within Europe?
It is historical. It is due to current events, increased immigration at the moment. As I said, it can be even said that some political parties in Europe, populism is rising there. And for instance, in Finland, in Sweden, these parties got into government, into parliament. They have a great backing. Mm. And some critics say that even these parties can be fueling this ideology.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Savage Nation. We're going to talk about the phenomenal story, the awful story of the Norway massacre. We're going to talk about the fact that George Soros, perhaps the most dangerous man in the world, has closed his hedge fund to avoid disclosures required by the new SEC. We're going to talk about another Democrat resigning amid sexual encounter allegations and other stories on the Savage Nation. But first, back to the horrible story of the Norway massacres. I want to put the record straight. I want you to call me at 1-800-449-8255 because there's a lot of BS being slung around here, both left and right. Both sides using this for their own agenda. Why don't you see if my mantle, which is independent conservative, holds up today? Okay, so listen to what I'm going to tell you. Here's my monologue. The Christian terrorist. In the aftermath of the Norway massacre, talking heads are telling us that the crimes of Anders Behring Breivik are simply the product of insanity. Today, his lawyer claimed that his beliefs are insane. Everyone is claiming that this had nothing to do with his Christianity. Even the leprechaun Bill O'Reilly on Fox News said Breivik is not a Christian. But the terrible truth of the matter is that Breivik is a Christian. He loudly proclaims his Christianity. He calls himself, quote, 100% Christian in his manifesto. He claims to be a member of the Knights Templar, which is presumably a reinvention of the 12th century Christian organization which participated in the Crusades. When he justifies his violence, who does he quote? He quotes the Bible, Luke, Matthew, Isaiah, Daniel, 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, Exodus, Samuel, Judges, and Psalms. The manifesto that he wrote says, quote, God will anoint you with his power to go into battle, and God can be a man of war if he wants to be. Even the dates listed in his manifesto are aligned with dates in the history of the Christian-Muslim conflicts. For example, the date he selected for the final purge of Muslims from Norway was in 2083, which is the 400th anniversary of 1683 at the Battle of Vienna, where the Muslim Ottoman Empire was defeated and stopped from invading the rest of Europe. Just as the radical Muslim terrorists are Muslim, this radical Christian terrorist is a Christian. And just as moderate Muslims must speak out against the violent acts of their radical brethren, good Christians must speak out strongly against violence of this nature and against any radical terrorists that may be within their ranks. Radical Muslim terrorists distort the Quran and the Islamic tradition in ways most Muslims would never accept. But nevertheless, they base their terrorism in the tradition of Islam. Anders Breivik has done the same. The Islamo-fascists attack and kill their own people in order to further their own radical ends. They've killed Muslims, that is, Muslim killing Muslims, in Iraq, in Morocco, in Afghanistan. And why do they do it? Why? Because many Islamic radicals have a greater animosity towards dissenting Muslims than toward Westerners. In Pakistan, the radical group, Sunni Muslim group, Sipah-e-Sahaba, has not only killed many members of the Shia minority, but many of their own Sunni clerics have been killed as well, because the clerics rejected their extremist agenda, often imposing their radical vision of Islam, is more important to them than the hatred of the West. Similarly, the Christian terrorist in Norway targeted his own people. He wanted to kill members of the Labour Party, native-born Norwegians, because in his twisted mind, eliminating members of a liberal political party in his own country was more important to him than eliminating an outside threat. I've said time after time on this show, The Savage Nation, that the greatest threat and the greatest victims, rather, of radical Islam, the greatest victims of radical Islam happen to be their own co-religionists. And now a radical Christian fundamentalist has attacked his own people in order to further his extremist cause. Now, it is true that Anders Breivik twisted the Christian tradition in directions that 99% of Christians could never accept. But his violence was based in Christian thought and history. The Islamofascists killed their own in Pakistan, in Iraq, and Afghanistan. The radical Sikh Hindus killed their own when they blew up Air India Flight 182 in 1985 and killed 22 Indians. And now, a radical Christian terrorist in Norway has killed his own as well. We find that the greatest enemy is the enemy within, and those who refuse to acknowledge the connection will never be able to stop this madness within their ranks. Footnote to this monologue on the Savage Nation. Bill O'Reilly was dead wrong yesterday saying that this cold-blooded murderer is not a Christian. I've just proven it. Two, Glenn Beck's lack of historical knowledge is appalling. Glenn Beck said that the youth camp that he visited, the murderer visited, and slaughtered 70-some-odd kids on, was training the equivalent of Hitler Youth. No, Glenn, you got it 180 degrees wrong. It was modeled on the Soviet state-run Young Pioneers, where youth were turned into Communist Party activists. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. If you have a comment on my comments, I want to hear from you right now. 1-800-449-8255. Let's begin in Wisconsin. Tom, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I've been a Christian fundamentalist for over 12 years now. Nowhere in the fundamentals of Christianity does it say that you have the right to go murder people. So
well, that's right, you, because you're a rational man, but he's irrational. But he's a Christian and identifies as a Christian.
Irrational. That doesn't make you. That doesn't give you the right to try and say that you're a Christian. I could say.
Whoa! Hold on. I didn't say he's Christian. He said he's Christian.
Well, he says he's Christian. Barack Obama says he's a Christian. We know that's a lie.
Yeah, but you see, here's the problem. You cannot simply say that because people do things you don't approve of, you denounce or renounce their religious affiliation. It's for them to renounce their religious affiliation, not you.
I can compare it to that. That's our standard. Our standard isn't my opinion. The standard is the...
Wait a minute. Did you hear my monologue or not? I said that he twisted his own religious beliefs. Didn't you hear me say that?
I caught just the end of it.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, thanks for calling with just the end of it. You see, this is the problem with talk radio. People either hear a piece of what you say or none of what you say, or they hear what they want to hear. Shall I read the monologue again so you finally get it right? Would you like me to read it all over again? And maybe you can come into the classroom late next time again and tell me you were late because you were snorting glue in the locker room? I mean, what do you mean you got it late? Either you listen to what I say and you argue with me, or you don't listen to what I say and don't argue with me. Sit there like the dummy you are and not know what's going on around you. I'll repeat it again. The Norway murderer was a Christian, not by my definition. In his own manifesto, he calls himself, quote, 100% Christian. In his own manifesto, he claims to be a member of the Knights Templar, which is presumably a reinvention of the 12th century Christian organization which participated in the Crusades. When he justifies his own violence in his manifesto, he quotes the Bible, Luke, Matthew, Isaiah, Daniel, 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, Exodus, Samuel, Judges, and Psalms. His own manifesto says, God will anoint you with his power to go into battle, and God can be a man of war if he wants to be. Shall I go on? I will when I return, but I want to hear from the rest of you. 1-800-449-8255, Michael Savage. Bobby, you're up. Go ahead.
Yeah, Mike, I gotta join in here. I'm a big supporter of you, but though the man nominally he may be a Christian, this may be a semantic debate. He's not a Christian any more than Benedict Arnold was a good American. I mean, he can call himself.
So wait, then you're agreeing then with the government liberals who argue that the 9/11 Muslims are not really Muslims because they twisted the Quran. Is that what you're saying?
Actually, I have a very close Muslim friend who says that they have gone off the rails.
Hold on, but they're still Muslims, aren't they? Or do you say they're not Muslims?
In a nominal sense, they're Muslims, but they're not.
Okay, so in the same sense, this man is a Christian.
Well, if you think Jim Jones was a Christian.
We're not talking about Jim Jones. We are talking about a man who quotes the Bible, who says he's a Christian, who invokes symbolism and dates from the Crusades. He is steeped in Christianity. He is oozing Christianity. That does not mean he represents modern Christianity. Those are two different things.
Larry David, the schmuck Jewish guy, is he a Jew?
He would say he's Jewish. I would say he represents the worst of the Jews. But he wouldn't agree. What he wouldn't agree with that. He would say he's a better Jew than a rabbi.
Mike, that's a direct parallel analogy to what this fiend is.
I hear you. Listen, we're probably saying the same thing, and over a beer or two, we'd come to understand we understand each other. But I am telling you that as an independent conservative, I'm not going to sit here and listen to this twisted malarkey that O'Reilly's coming up with, that the man is not a Christian, or that the uneducated adult Glenn Beck comes up with saying that the guy killed them because they're members of the Hitler Youth.
I agree with you. And while we're...
All right, well, okay. Listen, here's the question of the day on the Savage Nation. Do you think the Norwegian massacre artist is sane, or is he a rational Christian terrorist? Do you think the Norwegian shooter was sane, or is he a rational Christian terrorist? 1-800-449-8255. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Du hast mich. Du hast mich.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Attention, is Norway's suspected murderer a Christian terrorist? I say yes. O'Reilly, who is often wrong, but wraps himself in the flag, O'Reilly came out and said that no, he is not a Christian. Glenn Beck, who gets everything 180 degrees off, said that, well, he slaughtered those young people on the island because they were like the Hitler Youth. I find this repugnant. And the reason I find it repugnant is because both men are either ignorant or purposely being wrong. This man is clearly a Christian terrorist. Why do I say it? I have supported Christians from the day I began on this radio program, but I'm not going to support a Christian madman who is also a terrorist. Now, where do I come up with the fact that he says he's a Christian? He says he's a Christian, not me. The man in Norway loudly proclaims his Christianity. He writes he is 100% a Christian. In his manifesto, the lunatic claims to be a member of the Knights Templar, which is presumably a reinvention of the 12th century Christian organization, which participated in the Crusades. He justifies his violence with quotes from the Bible. I can go on, and I will, and I'll do it again. So we're arguing, is he a Christian or not? The answer is clearly yes, he's a Christian. It does not mean that all Christians are terrorists. Or that he is enacting the rules or the laws or the edicts of Christianity. He is clearly not. Nevertheless, he is a Christian. And to say he is not may make you feel better, but it's not going to stop the next lunatic who will wrap himself in a cross and go out and kill children. New York, Andrew, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage. Hi, it's a pleasure. We were talking before. I have to respectfully disagree with you. This is so obviously... It's obvious that he's not a Christian. It's like saying, you know, acid honey. It's an oxymoron, Dr. Savage. It's not the same thing.
Well, why is it an oxymoron? He defines himself as a Christian. Who am I to deny his reality?
I beg your pardon?
Again, I have to repeat myself. Now you're acting like a liberal. They often make you repeat yourself when they can't answer you. He says he's a Christian. I'm not saying he's a Christian. I'm giving you his own definition of himself.
It's like saying ass and honey. I mean, that's pretty obvious. It's an oxymoron. Christian means Christ-like. It's like saying the Ku Klux Klan were Christians. Whereas in Islam, there is a suspicion. When you pass a
Whoa. See, now you're leaping, because I was going to say to you, by the same token, using the same logic then you would agree with liberals who say that the Muslims who blew up the Twin Towers were not real Muslims because Islam does not teach people to do that. And you're going to argue, yes, it does.
Islam, the Quran, does teach violence in some respect, but the New Testament...
The New Testament may have espoused all violence, but the Old Testament does not. The Old Testament is filled with hellfire and brimstone.
That's correct. However,
have you read the Old Testament? I mean, I can read you chapter and verse filled with the most violent passages imaginable, and this man seems to have latched on to the Old Testament.
Dr. Savage, Jesus taught his disciples to heal the sick, raise the dead, so on and so forth. He never taught his disciples to go out and kill.
So how did the Christians who died in World War II go and fight the enemy? They didn't do it with love. They didn't hit him with Bibles, did they?
No, I'm not anti-war, because Jesus never led an
So how can you be anti-violence and not anti-war? I don't understand it. In other words, a Christian can kill. He can wear a cross and he can still kill you. He can wear a cross and pull out a gun and blow your brains out, and then go into the church and take a wafer.
Jesus never taught terrorism. Jesus never, ever encouraged terrorism. Never.
Well, Jesus may not have, but apparently this guy got it from somewhere and says he's a Christian.
It's lunacy. It's like saying acid honey, Dr. Savage.
Well, okay, but I understand, but it's like the other caller said to me, Savage, would you agree, would you think that Larry David is a Jew? I don't think he's Jewish, but he would argue he is Jewish. He says it all the time. To me, he's a repugnant Jew. He's disgusting. He's a stereotype of everything wrong with Jews. And yet, if you ask Larry David, he'd tell you he's a better Jew than a rabbi.
Well, you know, a Jew, by definition, is a son of Abraham. And if you want,
son of Abraham? Have you met a few of Larry David's friends? They're more son of something else than son of Abraham.
Well, yeah, he's a Jew.
And then the last is starts with a B and ends with an H. It's a son of something else, not the son of an A and an M.
Savage.
All right, welcome back to the Savage Nation. Look, I have defined myself as an independent conservative from the day I started in radio. So let's start with that, right? Not a Republican. I am certainly not a Democrat. I am definitely not a liberal. I am definitely an independent. I see the massacre in Norway last Friday. I was on the air. You heard what I said. I was shocked to find out that it was conducted by a white man. Let's start with that, okay? Let's be basic. Now, I said to myself, this is crazy. It defies logic that a right-winger would go and kill white children. If he's anti-Muslim, and I'm not suggesting he should have done that, again, don't misinterpret me. But wouldn't logic have said that anyone who slaughters white children at a camp would have been based on religious affiliation? No, based upon political affiliation. And it had to do with Norway. Would you have expected it to be a white guy? No. So we look into the guy and we read his own writings, and he says he is a Christian. He quotes Christian law. He quotes not only Christian law, Knights Templar, via reinvention of the 12th century Christian organization. He justifies his violence with quotes from the Bible, Luke, Matthew, Isaiah, Daniel, Corinthians, Exodus, Samuel, Judges, Psalms. Even the dates listed in his manifesto are aligned with dates in the history of the Christian-Muslim conflicts. For example, the date he selected for the final purge of Muslims from Norway will be in 2083, which will be the 400th anniversary of 1683 at the Battle of Vienna, where the Muslim Ottoman Empire was defeated and stopped from invading the rest of Europe by Christian knights. And I said to you, just as the radical Muslim terrorists are Muslim, this radical Christian terrorist is a Christian. And I then gave you a footnote, which I want to repeat. Bill O'Reilly was dead wrong yesterday when he says this cold-blooded murderer is not a Christian. The man himself says he is a Christian. And Glenn Beck's lack of historical knowledge is appalling. Glenn Beck had the insanity to say that the kids who were killed were at a training camp the equivalent of Hitler Youth. No, Mr. Beck, It was modeled on the Soviet state-run Young Pioneers, which is what you really meant, where youth were turned into Communist Party activists. It doesn't mean you go and kill them. Okay? Alabama, Paul, you're on the Savage Nation.
How are you today?
Please, what's your main point?
My name is Paul.
No, what's your point, Paul?
Is that I'm inclined to agree with you on this one because I think the real problem is extremism, whether it be a Christian extremist, a Muslim extremist, a Republican extremist, a Democrat extremist. I just think the extremism is where the problem is.
Well, now we can start to define extremism. Not all extremists are murderers. Remember what Barry Goldwater said, extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. He didn't mean go out and slaughter people, did he?
No, sir.
All right, so you see, now you got to understand that words are powerful. I'm a master of the word. To me, the word is something real. That's why I'm so good at what I do. But when you suddenly say it's extremism, then start to define extremism. All extremism is not bad. I'm very extreme in anything I do. When I built model airplanes when I was 9 years old, I was an extreme model airplane builder, right? And does that mean I was crazy or bad? So not all extremists are murderers or terrorists. I am saying to you simply, and we don't have to beat this up, by his own definition, Norway suspected murder Anders Breivik is a Christian terrorist. Read his own manifesto. Here's another story for you today. Another Democrat, another sex scandal. That's the lunatic from Oregon, Mr. Wu. Mr. Wu stepped down today. Here's another story. George Soros, perhaps the most dangerous man in the world, closed his hedge fund today to avoid disclosures required by the new SEC. That's a shocking story in that it's a shocking story. And the reason Soros closed his hedge fund to outside investors, by the way, he's only going to use his fund for his own family money, is because if he invested other people's money, by the new definitions of the SEC, in order to rein in these gangsters, he would have to make disclosures he doesn't want to make. What do you think he's hiding? What do you think George Soros is hiding? These are amazing stories, and they're all coming out right now in the middle of the summer. Many people on vacation, you think that the world comes to an end because you're in a canoe? It doesn't. New York, John, you're on the Savage Nation from WOR. What's on your mind, John?
Satan quoted the Bible to Jesus himself. Quoting the Bible does not make you Christian. Joining Christian organizations does not make you Christian. How to judge a Christian, I'm going to tell you. If the person says they have a personal relationship with Jesus, that's how you know it's a Christian. I don't care if you've been baptized. I don't care if you've gone to church every day. I don't care if your parents were part of it.
I hear you. Okay, so he has a personal relationship with Jesus. Now, let me ask you a loaded question. Would you argue that the Catholic priest who is convicted of molesting boys, who prior to the molestation had a personal relationship with Jesus and probably a very good one, is not a Christian?
It depends on the individual. It depends on the circumstances.
But you can't argue that all the molesters are suddenly not Christian because they were caught with their hands in the boy's pants, can you?
No, Michael, notice what this, we're talking about this individual. He said he joined the Christian organization, he quoted the Bible. That doesn't make him Christian. You have to, if you ever get a chance to interview him, you should ask him, do you have a personal relationship?
Well, I'll never interview him, number one, but let's say that he did more than join a Christian organization. He calls himself, quote, a 100% Christian. By his own definition, he says he's 100% Christian.
But that's not, you're not listening to what I'm saying. I'm saying he has to say he has a personal relationship with Jesus. And by doing that, you will, as the Bible says, you will know him by his fruit. His fruit. This clearly, this is not fruit.
Well, with the priest, that's 100% true.
This is the opposite. No, you'll know a Christian by his fruit. For you, from now
what
on.
What do you mean by his fruit? What does that mean? What does that mean? By what he does? By his acts?
What he produces. What did he produce? Did he produce a hospital for children? Did he produce...
So you're arguing every listener to this show who's a Christian has built a hospital?
No, 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 no. Don't take it out of... You're getting too far out. I'm just giving you an example.
I think what you're doing is you're very uncomfortable because the guy is a Christian and he's a terrorist and you don't like it. And naturally you're trying to say he's not one of us because he did this. Unfortunately, the reasoning you're using is not valid because he said he is a Christian.
Just finish. Can I just finish?
You did finish. You are finished. That's all. I mean, look, I'm not here to make people crazy, but I can see what's going on already. Because the same thing is argued by Muslims who will say they're not Muslims when they do when they blow things up. Let's go back to other religions. I mean, I quoted some of the other the other examples from other religions so that you don't feel picked on here and suddenly say, I know it's coming tomorrow. Tomorrow the Catholic League will accuse me of being anti-Catholic because I pointed this out. You know, Bill Donahue will come out and attack me after I defended the before Glenn Beck knew who the Catholic League was, before Fox News ever had Bill Donahue on, I was having him on my local show. And then all of a sudden, when I came out against the Catholic, the Pope, or excuse me, one of the top guys in the Catholic Church a few years ago because he was in favor of illegal immigration, suddenly Bill Donahue of the Catholic League attacked me. I'm used to it, by the way. You know, being rational and being right doesn't often engender love from the people. But I have a job on this show. You know what my job is? You know what my job is like Casey Stengel. I got to give you the, you know, I got to call him the way I see him. And I'm telling you, this guy is a Christian and he's a terrorist. But he's not the only terrorist amongst the religious, is he? There are many, many others in many other religions. And I have pointed them out to you. We don't have to go through the Muslims, do we? Because they occur on a too regular basis. But you should understand that there are also Buddhist terrorists. There are also Hindu terrorists. And so in every religion, there are terrorists who wrap themselves in their religion. So what is the point of my show? The point is to put aside the big lie that there was no Christianity in what he did. Well, maybe there's no Christian theology in what he did. I would agree with that. Not modern theology, not modern Christian theology, certainly does not teach that thou shalt kill thy neighbor if you disagree with their politics. But in the age in which we are living, people are trying to find justification for their madness, for their insanity, and their violence. Unfortunately, they're trying to wrap themselves in religions, as we can see. And I think it's very important that we know this, okay? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Indiana, Rob, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hello. Just wanted to say that millions of people have been killed in the name of God, no matter what religion they are.
Yes, and how many millions have been killed in the name of Karl Marx?
Many.
Correct. So it's not limited to religion. People will use many things to justify violence. But remember that state-sponsored murder has been conducted by the Soviet Union and by Maoist China, neither of which were religious. Okay? It was not done on the basis of religion. It was done on the basis of Marxism, communism. Communism resulted in the death of 100 million people in the last century. Nothing to do with religion.
Correct.
Thank you. So where are we going to go with that one? Houston, Brandon, next case. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, what do I say? I know you'll get to it at some point, and I'll get it through your show. What do I say to my liberal friends that are looking to this as a victory, telling me that, oh, Christianity's wrong, my...
Ah, okay. Now, there is the essence of the good question. That is a great question. Because they're trying to now smear the entire religion based upon one mad extremist. Isn't that what they're doing?
Yeah, I'm constantly arguing.
So that's
arguing.
What you say to them. How could if you're such a liberal, say to them, and you're so tolerant, how could you now brand an entire religion as evil and as terroristic because of one man? How could you do that? Does that make you liberal? Does that make you tolerant? Put it back on them. Does that help you with the answer?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, well, there it is. I don't have to repeat it. It was very obvious. Fortunately, I mean, that's what I would say to them. 1-800-449. Does anyone agree with me? Does anybody listening to this show agree with a word I've said? I doubt it. You see, here's the problem with being an independent-minded guy as I am, who actually thinks about things very clearly instead of telling you what you want to hear. Bill O'Reilly told you that he wasn't a Christian because he wanted you to like him. Okay? That's all he did it for. They're just trying to say, okay, well, I'm on your side. All you Christians keep listening to me on Fox News. That's you can do that. It's your prerogative. But let me tell you something. The base of my audience is fundamentalist Christian, incidentally. Probably a good portion of listeners on my show, I would say a good percentage are Christians, and a good percentage of the Christians are fundamentalist. The largest number of listeners on my show are independent politically. Politically independent, neither Democrat or Republican. I don't know what their religion is at all. And I'd say 20% of the listeners are diehard liberals who love me because they understand that I'm extremely well-founded in what I say. They may disagree with me. Sometimes they learn things from me. But they're tired of hearing conservatives who don't know the first thing about history and can't use logic. So they listen to me. And I would say to you that going into this show today, I knew that I'd offend 80% of my listeners, and the liberals would never call to say, good job, Savage, I really like you now. I knew I wouldn't hear that from a liberal. Because one thing you can tell about a liberal is they'll never admit when they're wrong. They're like your mother-in-law, okay? They're like your mother-in-law. Has your mother-in-law ever agreed that she was wrong about something? And if you want to go, you don't want to go that far. Has your wife ever? Do you ever catch your wife? Does anyone have a wife who ever said that they were wrong about anything? Has anyone ever met a woman, actually? Forget the wife now. Let's go down to the girlfriend. Have you ever had a girlfriend who even ever admitted she was wrong? If she wrecked the car while you were driving and she said you did something to her, you were talking to her too loud or you got her crazy and she turned off the highway. Same thing. Mississippi Aaron, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I must say yes. that I was first offended by your statement, but then I thought about it, and I completely agree with you. There are many groups out there, Christian groups, that are extremely zealous in the faith, such as the people of Westboro Baptist Church.
Oh, there you go. The ones who go to the funerals of fallen soldiers and say God killed them because of gay marriage?
Absolutely. You know.
Yeah, yeah, right. What would you say? They're Christians?
I would say they're Christians. I say that they're a little off base because of the teachings of Jesus Christ.
Well, I'd say they're a lot off base. But, okay, yes, you're right. They are Christians. But see, this is what I'm trying to say is it doesn't mean you have to be ashamed of your religion because of a lunatic. In fact, I would embrace my religion even more because Christianity is a beautiful religion. Modern Christianity teaches love. It teaches tolerance. It teaches the embracing of kindness.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, and so I would embrace the religion even more. That's the important thing to remember. And I think if you started by saying, oh, man, that's Savage, I don't know what to think of him now, I don't like him, you know, he attacked Christians. I didn't attack Christians. I'm 100% right. Doesn't mean I attack Christians. Sacramento, Jim, what do you think? You're on the Savage Nation.
Well, I'm a Christian, and I agree with you 100%, and I'm glad that you can bring this out and let the listeners hear about this. And to deny that this person is a Christian would be an injustice.
Beautiful, man. You're like a Barry Goldwater, a Westerner who can think.
Yeah.
How did you maintain your ability to think west of the Hudson River?
Well, because I listened to you.
Oh, you got me there, buddy. Let me send you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. It's the only thing I can give you other than my dog, and you ain't getting him.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Stay on the line. I'll send you a copy of Trickle Up Poverty. Still a great book. Now, here's an interesting caller coming up now in Sacramento. Petri, you want to make another bigger point, and I wish you would. Go ahead, please.
I think he has made a success on his efforts with this murder. He made a mark on the world. Everyone is talking about it. The U.S. is talking about it. The world is talking about it. And he, his metaphor with this crusade stuff in Christianity, That's just what it is. I mean, if he's Christian or not, yes, he's a sane Christian terrorist, and he has made his mark, and that's what he succeeded to do. He's rebelling.
So he made his mark in what sense? He showed that as a Christian, he's willing to kill his own kind in order to stop the Muslim invasion?
Yes, yes, he's proven a point.
Oh, but see if you can help me with this reasoning, because I don't follow that logic. Nor am I going to justify what I mean, I'm not trying to justify it if someone did that. I would say it's wrong in either case, as I've said with Muslim terrorists. But had this lunatic blown up a mosque, God forbid, or slaughtered Muslim children, God forbid, in a Muslim summer camp, you would say he's a bastard, he's a terrorist, he's evil. But you would see he'd be consistent with his insanity and his beliefs, right?
Right.
How does killing white kids confirm what he's doing as rational?
It doesn't. I can't explain it because he is insane to some degree, but he's smart enough, intelligent enough to know that his calculated efforts have taken him this far and he committed to it and did it. And so eye for eye, blood for blood, he's making that example that, look, as a Christian, I'm standing up and here's what I'm doing and I'm going to hell for it or whatever. I'm going to suffer the consequences and the ramifications. But hello, world, look what it is. Straight in the face, you know. He's defiant right there.
Do you denounce Norway's Christian terrorist? Or do you truthfully, give me a straight answer. Do you denounce what he did or do you support it?
I denounce it, but I'm Scandinavian and I can understand a little bit and I'm putting myself out there by saying that, but I can understand.
I hear you because it's a very, very tricky question. When I come back, failures of the police and security forces in the Norway massacre. You're not going to believe why it took them 90 minutes to get there. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Just joined the show. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com and read the monologue that I've been talking about on the show this hour, The Christian Terrorist, The Greatest Enemy is the Enemy Within. And unless we learn from this, I'm afraid there are going to be more of these situations in the world which are to be avoided. In my absolute and most honest opinion, this is not the way to solve the problem of massive immigration, Muslim immigration, the threat of Sharia law, and the worldwide socialist movement. Now, I want to talk about failures of the police and security forces in the Norway massacre. Although Norway's top police intelligence body, the PST, said Breivik's name was put on a watch list last March after he bought chemicals in Poland, no further action was taken because he bought only $20 worth and did nothing else suspicious. Well, one could look backwards and say perhaps he was conducting a little experiment in his barn. PST head John Christensen said he lived a life that was incredibly respectful of the law. Well, I guess not, Mr. Christensen. Police admitted that they didn't send a SWAT team to Utøya, not to be confused with Utopia Island, until 50 minutes after receiving reports that Breivik had opened fire. He continued to shoot while police were delayed another 40 minutes because there was no available helicopter. Why? All helicopter crew members had been on vacation. Would they have one helicopter in all of Finland? Also, a police boat was dispatched to the island but was so overloaded with cops and equipment that it began to sink. Norway Justice Minister Knut Storberget will meet police chiefs today to demand explanations. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, had the cops gotten there 30 minutes earlier, there'd be 30 less dead. He was killing one a minute. And incidentally, if people had guns, think.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Nation, we are talking about a very, very tragic subject. It is a tragedy of the highest order. Certainly not something I have seen in my lifetime. Nothing like this have I seen in my lifetime, truthfully, that I know of, where you have a man who kills his own kind, even his co-religionists, just because of a different political affiliation, and he says he does it in the name of his religion, Christianity. Many of you are arguing that the Norway murderer was not a Christian. And I will tell you that I disagree with you because by his own definition, he says he is 100% Christian. He claims to be a member of the Knights Templar, presumably a reinvention of the 12th century Christian organization, which participated in the Crusades. The Norway murderer justifies his violence by quoting the Bible, Luke, Matthew, Isaiah, Daniel, Corinthians, Exodus, Samuel, Judges, and Psalms. Even the dates listed in his manifesto are aligned with dates in the history of the Christian-Muslim conflicts. If you want to read more about this, go to michaelsavage.com because my entire monologue, The Christian Terrorist, The Greatest Enemy is the Enemy Within, is up there. Now, I have received a few different responses. 99% of you disagree with me. I have not. I've proven one thing, though. I suspected that my Christian listeners would disagree with me at first, and then think about it and say, you know what, he's right. However, I didn't expect all of you to agree with me at any time. I also knew that not one liberal would have the guts to call the show and say, you know, Savage, I disagree with your politics, but you are right. I didn't do this to win favor with them. They're absolutely predictable. Liberals will never tell you you are right. They're like women. And I mean the men liberals, are all like bad women. They're all like bad women. They'll never admit when they're wrong. And then I have a friend in the media whose name I will not mention, a man I respect greatly, who is a Christian, who is angry at me. He says, you got me so mad I spent 45 minutes trying to call in. He says, even a broken clock is right twice a day, which explains how the leprechaun is right this time, but even the smartest guy in the radio can be wrong occasionally. Then I have a friend on the other side, I wouldn't say the other side, he doesn't have to be, happen to be a religious man, he's a physicist and a logician and a brilliant man, and he says, Savage, your logic is rigorous, impeccable, great show today. Two sides of the same coin or the opposite side of coins? Do you think that the terrorist was a Christian? Or do you think that he is not a Christian by his acts? Many of you are arguing that he is not a Christian because of what he did. I would have to say that I am not here to tell you what I think he is. I'm here to tell you what he says he is. And he says he's 100% Christian. He says he was doing it to save Christianity and Western civilization from the Muslim invasion. Now, there is a Muslim invasion of Europe. Everyone knows it, including the Labour Party that he attacked, including the socialists who support the Muslim invasion both there and here, including the Marxists over there and over here. They want the Muslim invasion of the West. They are working to invade the hegemony of the white man. They are doing it on purpose. One could argue it's being done right here in America by Barack Hussein Obama and by our own leadership or lack thereof. In fact, many of us feel the same way that he did, but we would never kill. We would never kill, but we know that we're being stepped on. We're being abused. We're being castigated. We're being ripped off, but we don't kill. 1-800-449-8255. I'll open it up to you with the main question of the day on the Savage Nation. Is the Norwegian shooter sane, or is he a rational Christian terrorist? Also, a Democrat from Oregon, Representative David Wu, resigned today after being accused of sexually harassing the teenage daughter of a campaign contributor. It also came out that he was accused of rape while at Stanford University, but was not prosecuted. Last month, Anthony Weiner resigned after sending explicit pictures and texts to women on the Internet. I ask, why are Democrats sexually and fiscally irresponsible? What is it about Democrats that make them sexually and fiscally irresponsible? Sacramento, Andrew, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, my point's real quick here. This guy obviously was not following proper Christian doctrine, and yes, he could have been a Christian. If you believe the gospel, which is in 1 Corinthians, the three parts, that Christ was the Son of God, that he died for men's sins, and he rose the third day after that, then you are a Christian. Now, the fruit that he displayed wasn't so great, but that does not define whether you're a Christian either. Now, a lot of Christians who don't follow the proper doctrine will jump right to saying that he's not because they feel associated. Now, I do follow the proper doctrine. It's very hard to find. A lot of teachers, a lot of churches will, the Catholic Church, I don't totally agree with. They don't follow it, right? The word doctrine in the Greek is didache, which means doctrine for practice, and it's in the New Testament. My point, though, is that the man could have certainly been a Christian and tempted by what is called the temptations of the flesh. There are 17 of them. One of them is murder. And he could very well be forgiven of that by his Father God in heaven and still go there. Now,
well, you're losing me in your analysis, even though it's deeply thought about. I understand that. But am I right in calling the Norwegian murderer a Christian terrorist? I believe so, by his own definition.
Does he believe the gospel?
I don't know. He says he's a Christian. That's all I've got to go on.
Yes. Yeah, see, we don't know. We don't really
But did
know.
You know that he wrote the following, and I'm going to quote him now. He wrote this quote. It is enough that you are a Christian agnostic. Listen to those that combo. He wrote this. It is enough that you are a Christian agnostic or a Christian atheist, an atheist who wants to preserve at least the basics of the European Christian cultural legacy, Christian holidays, Christmas, and Easter, he wrote. That's what he wrote. So he said, it is enough that you are a Christian agnostic or a Christian atheist.
I don't know what that means. Because
what this man actually did was copy Al-Qaeda's techniques. In fact, Breivik writes of Al-Qaeda with admiration, as if he would love to create a Christian version of their activities. And so if we can say that bin Laden was a Muslim terrorist, why couldn't we say that Breivik is a Christian terrorist?
It's quite easy to become a terrorist if you're a Christian, and both. The temptation is always there to the flesh, but that's not what the doctrine teaches.
Well, okay, I want to go back to the Muslim terrorists for a moment, because not all Muslims are terrorists. We know that. See, your logic will not support the idea that all Muslims are terrorists, because if they all were, then it'd be 1.1 billion Muslims at war with everybody on the earth, and they're not. They may hate you, but they're not terrorists. Just as you may hate others, but you're not a terrorist. And don't sit here and tell me that you got a halo over your head because you have a cross and you go to church. You know, look within your own heart and don't argue with me. Look within your own heart. Don't argue with me. I'm only a radio host who has a strong opinion on this and many other matters, or I wouldn't be on the radio. I would have disappeared a long time ago. I expect many of you are angry at me right now, and I expect many of you totally think I'm wrong right now, but I'll bet you that in a few days you're going to have discussions about this because of me, and you're going to call the show and say, Savage, you were right. Or you're not going to call the show, and you're going to say I was right anyway. That's okay, because I intend to provoke discussion. Not simply to be devil's advocate, because I believe in what I'm saying, but to make you understand the danger of certain ideas and where they can lead you. So having said that, Breivik wrote of Al-Qaeda with admiration. He actually admired Al-Qaeda. And that explains why this madman killed his own kind, killed young Norwegian children, 18, 20 years old, hunted them down like rabbits. The most dastardly Nazi-like act I've seen in my time. Well, the same as what I've seen here in America with guys with the black raincoats. What was that massacre, Beowulf, when the kids walked in with the guns on drugs? Columbine, okay? And hunted down fellow students and shot them like they were rabbits. I don't understand that mentality. To me, anyone who does that would have worked for Adolf Hitler in the death camps or in one of the Einsatzgruppen, going around shooting innocent civilians. You see, you don't understand the heart of man. I guess many of you don't want to understand that this heart of man has never gone away. The heart of evil exists in the human in the spectrum of humanity. Maybe I couldn't do it, maybe you couldn't do it, but listening to this show, I can guarantee you are many people who could do it and would do it if it was state sanctioned. And that is the danger of this type of thinking. There are many people who, if they were given a uniform and the authority to go out and do it, would round up innocent civilians of a political belief they don't agree with, of a religious orientation they don't believe with, and they would gladly shoot them, if not round them up and put them into a concentration camp and gas them. Don't assume it couldn't happen again. It could happen again. And I am telling you that when it appears, no matter what the symbol is, no matter what the religion associated with it is, you have to understand that evil exists, and you must stand up to it and say, no, that is not me. It doesn't mean you have to eschew your religious beliefs to eschew the man who uses your religion, or in fact embraces your religion, or in fact is of your religion, who is evil. It doesn't mean your religion is evil. It means he's evil. And so in casting out his evil, you make sure you yourself don't fall into that well. I'll be right back. Christian terrorist, the greatest enemy is the enemy within. Is Norway suspected murderer Breivik a Christian terrorist? Some would argue yes. I would include myself in that argument, not to slam Christianity, but as a warning to those of you who think that it can't happen within your own ranks. It can and it did. It can and it did, and it will happen again. Now listen to this.
I would remind you that extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. And let me remind you also that moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue.
Now, I am a Goldwater conservative. I believe those are the truest words ever spoken in my lifetime, next to Eisenhower's Beware the Military-Industrial Complex. However, it doesn't mean that you have to go out and start slaughtering innocent people if you believe that extremism and the defense of liberty is no vice. It doesn't mean you go out and blow things up and blow up parliament buildings. It doesn't mean you go out and kill children. And what I'm trying to have you understand is you can be an extremist without being a murderer. You can be an extremist without being a terrorist. In fact, I want to educate you that you absolutely can be an extremist and not be a terrorist. You absolutely can be an extremist in what you do and work around the clock to save this nation without having to resort to what this lunatic did in Norway. That is the whole point of my show, which is not to now withdraw from the battle against multiculturalism, not to withdraw in your battle against socialism, not to withdraw in your battle against cultural and economic Marxism, but in fact to redouble on your efforts and fight them with everything in you without resorting to terrorism. Do not resort to terrorism. Do not become a murderer, but be an extremist. I'm trying to tell you, you can be an extremist without being a terrorist. And I think that these definitions become critical, especially in times of our like ours, where we have an extremist in the presidency. How would you define Barack Obama if not as an extremist? Barack Obama is an extremist. Why do I say he's an extremist? He has taken an extreme position of the far left, which is that you must raise taxes without cutting spending. You must raise taxes on the productive members of society, and you must not cut a dime of the benefits that are being sucked out of the system by the 80 million people a week who get checks from the U.S. Treasury. I think it was 80 million people a week get a check from the U.S. government. Who do you think's paying that check? Well, some put money in the system, that's true. But a good percentage of them are not getting that check because they earned it. They're getting it because I'm working. They're getting it because you're working. So any president who says they're going to get every dime, we're not cutting a penny, we're not raising the retirement age, we're not increasing the co-payment, nothing. We're not touching Medicare, Medicaid, and we're going to tax those who are the most productive members of society. I would say that by that definition, Obama is a radical extremist, not just an extremist. And so therefore, you can be an extremist without being a terrorist. Although you could argue that if you go to war against your enemy, as he has done and is doing in several nations around the world, from Libya to Afghanistan, you could say he's also a terrorist. The left wing would argue that any man who goes to war is a terrorist. The left would argue that in conducting a war using NATO bombs on your enemy, you're a terrorist. So therefore, is a president a terrorist? Is this president a terrorist because of his wars in Libya and in Afghanistan? And so I guess there's still actions in Iraq. Let's not forget, men are still dying in Iraq. And while I mentioned the heroes who were dying in Iraq and Afghanistan and other parts of the world in order to defend my freedom and your freedoms, that this disgusting culturally Marxist media of ours, this degenerate, fellow traveling degeneracy, has spent 3 days talking about the death of a junkie, a sick, disgusting junkie named Amy Winehouse, without a similar, let us say, crying and genuflecting and oh my godding over the troops who were dying on a daily basis. I could not believe what I'm watching. Here is a woman who said she basically wanted to kill herself for years, taunting everybody with her heroin use and her cocaine use. So finally, she got what she asked for. I know people who are Democrats who say, thank God she's gone. I'm sick of her. I'm sick of these Hollywood degenerates, these musical degenerates, cavorting their drugs and their sex and their rock and roll as though it's some virtue when it's a degeneracy and it's a vice. God, that she's off the earth, they say. Thank God she's off the earth. I heard old women say that to me. Nice people. Democrats. They couldn't stand her. And yet the media's in love with her. Mourning her, the flowers, the balloons, the crying. Not one tear about those who were throwing themselves on grenades to defend fellow soldiers. Not one word about them. Instead, the degenerate cultural Marxist media talks about Amy Winehouse over and over again as though she was some role model. And so you wonder what the battle is about? You don't think there's a culture war? You don't think there's a culturally Marxist media? You don't think there's an invasion by the Southerners coming in over the border? By the guns and the drugs coming in over the border? You don't think that there's an invasion of Muslims in America? You're out of your mind. You are out of your mind. And you better stand up to it, but don't become a murderer to do so.
Savage. considered supporting him now, going to Norway, or to do anything for your son?
No, I'll never have more contact with him in my darkest moments. I think that rather than killing all those people, he should have taken his own life.
This is strong words from a father.
They are, but thinking about what has happened, I get so upset, and I still don't understand that something like this could happen. No normal human being would do something like that.
That's the father of the mass murderer in Norway, who says he wishes that his son had taken his own life instead of doing what he had done. Let's leave it at that without comment. This is clearly an issue for him to work out, not for me or you to work out. And I don't think I need to go into the fact that Breivik was fascinated with the Crusades and that he imagined himself to be a member of the Knights Templar, a Crusader army of 1,000 years ago. I don't need to repeat that to you. I think if you read anything about that, you can see this. But much can be said about the other side of the aisle, the Muslim extremists, the Muslim murderers, rather, Osama bin Laden, Zawahiri, and many other Islamist murderers. Remember, bin Laden was a businessman and engineer. Zawahiri was a medical doctor in Egypt. Neither were theologians or clergy. And yet they're identified or self-identified as Muslims. Doesn't mean that all Muslims espouse what they espouse. Unfortunately, too many Muslims do. Those who cheered after 9/11 and so on and so forth. I know that many of you don't want to accept that he was in any way a Christian or that any of the Muslims who do not believe in terrorism are not telling you the truth. I know that you actually believe that every Muslim is a terrorist, many of you, and that many of you want to quote the Quran in the areas where the Quran can be quoted rightly as saying that you shall, when you find an infidel, you shall smite him and put a knife to his neck. It's there. It's all in the sutras. It does not mean that all Muslims follow that fundamentalist brand of Islam. Unfortunately, too many of them do. However, if you want to look at the Old Testament, it has very similar edicts, incidentally. Oh, yeah, look at the Old Testament. Now, most Christians don't read the Old Testament nor follow it. They follow the so-called New Testament or the Christian Bible. But you're not going to argue that the poor old Orthodox Jew with the furry hat is walking around wanting to kill people simply because he believes in the Old Testament. They have understood that although it may have been God's word for those times, it's not necessarily God's words for these times. To me, I can't understand it, frankly. I've given up trying to say what I should follow, what I shouldn't follow. It becomes a point where I don't know what to do personally. I don't want to launch into me. I mean, if you're going to throw out one of it, then throw it all out. Where do you start? You're going to start judging what God said? I've heard Orthodox rabbis say that to me. Who is it for us to decide what we should follow and which commandments we shouldn't follow? Well, okay, where do you want to go with that one? You're going to stone an adulterer? If you see your father's nakedness, you're supposed to slay the person who uncovers your father's nakedness. Go down and read it. Read Leviticus. It's unbelievably full of murder for moral offenses. I don't believe Orthodox Jews murder adulterers. I don't believe Orthodox Jews murder homosexuals. Do you? So therefore, they're already not following the Old Testament. So therefore, they could also have a shrimp den and enjoy a ham sandwich by that definition. I realize I'm being comedic in a very dangerous political and religious arena, but that's my job, is to be me. That's my job, is to be me. In other words, you're going to either follow it or don't follow it. So what am I arguing? I don't know. What are you arguing? What do you think I'm arguing? I'm not arguing you should not eat shrimp and kill people. I mean, so you say, well, all right, so I'm not going to not kill people, but I'm not going to eat shrimp. Why? Why? I mean, if you're not going to do some of the edicts of the Old Testament, why are you doing any of them? Because you decided what you're going to be God now? You're going to start to decide which commandments you shall follow? How do you interpret this if you're a theologian? See, it's why I am not religious at the end of the day. At the end of the day, I'm not religious. I'm a spiritual person myself. Do I believe in God? Sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. You know, I mean, I really, the truth, I'm like Mother Teresa in that regard. I go up and down the whole spectrum. Some days I believe, some weeks I believe, sometimes I believe for years at a time. And then all of a sudden I wake up and I don't believe in anything except in survival. The one credo I personally have found to be the most motivational, operational, and inspirational for me is that of survival. Now, if that's a religion, then I'm a religious man. And that means survive, 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 and don't let anyone stand in your way. Short of killing them. I don't have to kill somebody to get around an obstacle. Okay, I can follow the law pretty good and get what I want. Okay? The trick is to have the guts to follow the law and the guts to use the law and the guts to stick to your guns and not give in. Doesn't mean you have to kill somebody to be tough, and it doesn't mean you have to kill somebody in order to follow your beliefs. But on the other hand, I don't know if that's a religion. To me, I don't know if a religion is of any value unless it teaches you how to survive. See, I felt that for a long time personally. Again, going back to my own personal belief system. I have to tell you, we are having this discussion. We may never have it again, and we may have it again and again and again. But I'll tell you again. I have been in synagogues. I have been in temples. I've been in churches. And I have never really felt at home in any of those houses of worship. It doesn't mean that they're bad or that they don't serve a useful social purpose. I believe they do. But did they teach the people survival skills? Maybe they do for you. They didn't for me. They did not for me. When I see stories of ancient Buddhist temples that taught their young acolytes the martial arts so that the Buddhist monks with the shaved heads who took vows of this and vows of poverty and vows of that and lived up there in the mountains of China and Tibet could defend themselves against invading armies using hoes and sticks and chairs, I said, now that is a religious teaching I can relate to. Now, is it a religious teaching to teach you how to kill an enemy with a hoe and a fishing rod and a chair? I don't know. They decided that the young men should not go to the gas chambers like the Jews did in World War II. That I respected. I respected that of the Buddhists who teach their young men to kill the enemy and not sit there with their hands begging them for their lives, but to poke their eye out with anything they have in the room. Because every Jew had done that in the beginning, there wouldn't have been a Holocaust. I've studied it inside and out. I don't care how many times you quote the Bible. What good is it if a man comes to you to kill you and your wife and children? The Bible will not save you. The Bible will not save you. I read this over and over again. I studied the Holocaust from the first day to the last. And let me tell you what I learned. And you go to scholars who studied this. You want to get into this? It's a little tangential here. I read that the Germans were such an orderly society that had the Jews been armed and had the Jews shot the SS or the Gestapo, rather, in the early days of the roundups and killed them in the hallways of their neat little German apartment buildings, there would have been such a disruption of middle-class German society that the Holocaust would have been derailed, that the German war machine would not have gone after the Jews the way they did. But because the Jews willingly packed their little valises and they said, let's go, Martha, and they walked like sheep into the cattle car and then were worked to death or gassed to death, it was done because they had no survival skills. So what good was the religion at that point? What did the religion do for them in the death camps as they watched their daughters being raped by those German bastards? What good did the Bible do them as they watched their children's necks being cut? What, did God come down and save them? No, the Jews who went into the sewers in Poland are the kind of Jews I respected. The Jews who went into the woods in Poland and joined the partisans and cut Nazis' throats and stole their guns and used them in little bands to fight the Nazis. Those are the Jews I respected. Not those who sat there begging for their lives and all they got for it was more slaughter and more humiliation. You know, in the next few days, I'm going to quote from a new book on World War II that just came out. It's unbelievable. A new scholarly work that will make your hair stand up. It will make your hair stand up. It's something that Mel Gibson should be forced to listen to for 24 hours straight with his eyes taped open and his ears taped open and his hands taped to a chair. I'm sorry I got distracted, but you know, you're talking about very volatile issues today. I am anyway. I mean, you're talking about the slaughter of innocent children, albeit they were the children of the Labor Party, the enemies of Norway's cultural identity. I understand that. But they were children. They were teenagers. They were unarmed. Where is the nobility in this man's act? How can anyone sit here and say that was a wonderful, justifiable act? He did a terrible thing, but I can understand it. How can you understand a thing like this? You don't go and kill children because they're the children of Labor Party members. Well, what kind of thinking is this? Then you're the same as the Muslim terrorist who puts a bomb in a pet store in Iraq, as they were doing. Those of you who served in Iraq know that was going on in the beginning. That the Muslim fanatics, Al-Qaeda, were putting bombs in pet store stands, areas where people brought their children to buy little goldfish when Iraq was being reconstructed. to kill as many children as possible. Now, you say, well, why would a Muslim want to kill Muslims? You can say, I can understand a Muslim extremist wants to kill American soldiers. I hate them for it. I would kill them first if I could, but I don't understand why they would kill Muslims. What's their thinking? What's their twisted logic? Their twisted logic is that unless you're an extremist, you're a collaborator. And if you're a collaborator, then you are with the crusader armies, the Americans. And therefore, if I kill enough of you, says the extremist, then more of you will become extremists like me, and there'll be more of us against the crusader. That's exactly what the psychopath Breivik did in Norway. He had the same twisted reasoning. He was not so much a student of McVeigh and the Unabomber as he was of Al-Qaeda. Listen to what I just said. The left is now trying to say he was a student of McVeigh, and he was a student of the Unabomber. No, he was a student of Al-Qaeda. He actually copied... He copied their tactics to a T, which was to attack the innocent members of his own race and his own religion in order to polarize the society and cause a civil war, exactly the way Al-Qaeda has written the manual on this. I'm trying to educate you as to what really is going on. This is a very complicated subject, which is why many of you are simply grasping your crosses and saying he is not a Christian. I wish I could agree with you, but I can't. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Savage here, home of the Savage Nation. Again, if you disagree with me or you haven't heard the whole show, the Christian terrorist is who I've been talking about in the aftermath of the Norway massacre. I've written a small monologue. It's on the right side of michaelsavage.com, as are these stories. George Soros closes his hedge fund to avoid disclosures. And when I say closes his hedge fund, I mean to outside investors, because he would have had to disclose who they were and many other things under the new SEC rules, which he absolutely abhors. And you know why. If you read Trickle Up Poverty, you know that I believe there is evidence that he had a great deal to do with the destruction of our economy. Wu to resign amid sexual encounter allegations. That's the lunatic congressman from Oregon. Democrat faces eroding support. He's gone. Came out, was accused of rape while at Stanford. Wu was accused of assault while in college at Stanford University. Today, I guess that would be considered normal behavior. I really don't know what goes on there. I didn't go to Stanford. Killer listened to Lord of the Rings music to mask screams of the innocent in Norway. He said the music was very inspiring and invokes the type of passionate rage within. That's the Norway lunatic. Police unarmed in liberal Norway. Did you know that? They're unarmed, basically. And yesterday, one of the cultural czars in Norway, one of the Marxist czars, or interior minister, whatever they call them there, one of the lunatic fringe ministers of Norway had the nerve to say, we don't want to arm our police even after this massacre because it makes us feel better as Norwegians to live in a society where there are not weapons. That goes along with the liberal credo of, I'd rather see 99 guilty men go free than one innocent man be convicted. That's the same kind of stupidity that I have heard all of my life from the mentally disordered liberals. 1-800-449-8255. California Governor Jerry Brown, a leftist extremist, by the way, nominates failed Obama pick Goodwin Liu to the state Supreme Court. He was rejected by the U.S. Senate, but this fanatic, this leftist fanatic, Gordon Liu, was picked by the extremist governor of California, Jerry Brown, who then put him on the state Supreme Court. See, I told you a politician can be an extremist without being a terrorist. And by definition, Jerry Brown is an extremist. Barack Obama is an extremist. You could argue George Bush was an extremist. Obama's clearly an extremist president. He knows that we're bankrupt. He knows he has to cut some of the so-called entitlement programs, but he won't do it. Instead, he wants to tax, tax, tax. And he wants to keep spending, spending, spending. By that definition, he is an extremist. Get it? Sacramento, Christopher, welcome to the program.
Yeah, Michael, this guy on page 1307 of his manifesto made a distinction between a cultural Christian and a religious one who believes in Jesus Christ. And I think that distinction is important to make. I think this guy went from fear of the invasion of the Muslims and the liberal elite that created it to the hatred that it drove him to the murder.
You say he defined himself as a cultural Christian?
Yes, he made the distinction between those of us who believe in Jesus Christ and interact, you know, in our lives, and then just the cultural basis of his country, where Christianity was the cultural.
Well, I understand that, but there are many individuals, I would argue, who believe that they're cultural, not religious Christians in this country, wouldn't you?
Exactly. In other words,
there are many Jews who say that they're cultural Jews, but not religious Jews. In fact, the majority of Jews define themselves as culturally Jewish, but not religiously Jewish.
But we still, you know, the American motto, except for Congress, of course, is, you know, do unto others as you do unto yourself. And this guy was far from that.
So are you arguing he was not a Christian?
Well, he makes the distinction himself in the manifesto that he was not a believer in Jesus Christ, but that he was a Christian by definition because of the Christian cultural environment of his country. He says that that's what makes us Christian. It's the cultural...
I've met Jews along the way, militant Jews, who said they're not religious at all, but because of anti-Semitism, they're defined by the anti-Semite as Jews. I think Jean-Paul Sartre made that point, which is that many Jews are defined by anti-Semitism rather than by religious beliefs.
I would agree with that. I mean, there's, you know, as you've already pointed out many times, like this Larry Davis character, I mean, he could hardly be called religious.
Right, but he would say that he's a Jew, and he's probably in his own mind more Jewish than a rabbi. Even though he makes a mockery of Jewish males, that's what he does. That's his stock and trade, which is why he's gone to the top of the class in America. The same way any a black who mocked himself and mocked black male in the 1940s, such as Stepan Fetchett, made a fortune doing so because he fulfilled the stereotypes that the white male wanted to see about blacks. The servile, a foolish black man is the same with Larry David. He represents the foolish, pecuniary, mean-spirited, cowardly Jewish attributes. And that is what the mainstream wants to see in all Jews. That's why Larry David is such not only a disgrace to the Jews, but a danger to the Jews.
Well, and this guy's danger is that he let his fear of what was happening to his culture turn to hatred, and then that led to murder, but it certainly didn't have anything to do with Jesus Christ.
All right, so your main point is that because he did not embrace Jesus Christ as his Lord and Master, he was not a Christian.
Well, that he wasn't behaving like one. He wasn't a practicing Christian, if you will. He may have had a cultural background in Christianity, which he may, in fact...
I'm not splitting hairs. I don't think you're splitting hairs, but we're agreeing that there's a portion of his dogma that is clearly Christian-based.
Yes, but in other words, it didn't allow him to overcome his fear, which turned into hatred, which turned into murder.
Okay, I hear you. I hear you. And I don't think either of us need to drive the point home even farther. I still believe he was sufficiently Christian in identity to be called Christian. He certainly didn't identify with the symbolism of Buddhism. He did not identify with the symbolism of Hinduism. He did not identify with the symbolism of Judaism, nor of Islam. Therefore, we have to say that in the largest sense of the word, identified with the symbolism of Christianity in so many different ways, that he clearly was a cultural Christian. But he himself said he's 100% Christian in his own manifesto. And therefore, what am I trying to say to you? I'm saying you can be an extremist in the defense of liberty without becoming a terrorist. And I'm also telling you not to let the liberals now back you in a corner and say that, aha, there he is, that's the real Christian. There he is, there's the evil Christian personified. And all of you are like that. The Tea Party is like that. All of you are like that. A guy like Larry David believes that in his closet every night. He sits and shakes in his boots that every white Christian is just like this man. That's what he believes in his heart. That's my analysis. That kind of craven individual, all of the liberals in Hollywood, that's what they actually believe. I know it's a disgusting thing to believe, but they actually believe that all of you are like the Norway lunatic. Every one of you who wears a cross is suspect to those in Hollywood, the cultural Marxists who hate this country.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Oh.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Pay its bills, and we will honor the full faith and credit of our country. I salute President Obama for putting forth a grand bargain. This is about the future in a very important way that reduces the deficit well into the future, and we should still strive for that or come as close to it as we possibly can. So I would hope that everyone is spending their energy on how we get that done rather than who's not going to be paid.
Yes, the circus continues with the chief clown in the center ring and the Democrat clowns around him. You know, there was a great article in the Washington Times by Dr. Milton Wolf called German Miracle Barack Obama Doesn't See. And it's an amazingly important article. I'm not going to read the whole thing to you. You should read the whole thing. I linked it up on michaelsavage.com. I'm going to read you one paragraph. The devastation caused by Obamanomics is now undeniable. According to Investors Business Daily, 2 million net private sector jobs have been lost. Unemployment has increased by 1.5 percentage points. Long-term unemployment is the worst ever on record. The dollar is 12% weaker. The number of Americans on food stamps has increased by 37%. The misery index, unemployment plus inflation, has increased by 62%. And the national debt has exploded by an alarming 40%. Mr. Obama is on pace to saddle America with more job-killing debt than all the first 43 presidents combined. Come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now. Now, they then give you a solution. It doesn't have to be this way. Mr. Obama, they said, is trapped in the mistaken belief that America's problems can only be solved by growing our government even larger. When all of you have is a hammer, when all you have is a hammer, they write, everything looks like a nail. And they then talk about what happened in Germany after World War II and how they saved their economy. You see, after World War II, a defeated and devastated Germany was under American occupation. And it was controlled by Keynesian economists along the lines of those advising our imposter president. And that Keynesian economic viewpoint included the American price control czar himself, John Kenneth Galbraith. The American overlords of Germany, as well as Germany's new Social Democratic Party, favored maintaining, listen to this, they favored maintaining the Nazi government's top-down government-directed economy with its price and wage controls, and restrictive regulations, which unsurprisingly created economic stagnation and crippling shortages of basic goods. Let me pause right here. So right after World War II, Germany's crippled. They say, you know what, we're going to keep the Nazi system of government where we have price controls, restrictive regulations. And what happened was they had economic stagnation and crippling shortages of basic goods. And then one bold German economist who understood the power of freedom dared to disagree. In a swift move on June 20th, 1948, a Sunday when everyone was away, economic director Ludwig Erhard freed the German market and the people, and he abolished most of the restrictive price controls and other burdensome government regulations while he simultaneously solidified monetary policy with the introduction of the Deutschmark. The American Keynesians and German socialists were aghast, but Erhard was quickly proven right. What happened? Germany's economy responded with a roar heard round the world. Within weeks, businesses sparked back to life, and crippling shortages were eliminated. Within a year, the war-torn Western zones united to become Western Germany, which quickly and overwhelmingly outpaced the Soviet-controlled Eastern Germany. Within 10 years, West Germany's economic doubled, leaving behind West Germany's economy doubled, leaving behind Allied winners of the war, France and England. Despite the Marshall Plan, within a half century, the Berlin Wall crumbled, and with it, the Soviet's evil empire. This is the story of the German economic miracle. What does this have to do with your idiot in the White House? What does this have to do with morons like Nancy Pelosi? What does this have to do with big government nightmare psychotics like the Democrat Party? Mr. Obama has turned our Great Recession into the Obama Depression with his own now old, tired, and discredited big government schemes. Meanwhile, Obama cannot see the obvious lessons of the German miracle. Unleash the free market, unshackle entrepreneurs and workers from big government controls, and we, the free people of the United States, can rescue our economy and create our own 21st century American miracle. Again, Dr. Milton Wolf, The Washington Times, German Miracle, Barack Obama Does Not See. I linked it up on michaelsavage.com. If you care to comment on this, give me a call at 1-800-449-8255. It's astounding. It is astounding to see that the basics are not understood by this college group, these college stooges who are running America, along with the corrupt Democrat stooges, and that is why this country is in such trouble. A generic Republican running against Obama would beat him by 8 percentage points. Now, that is not to say that Romney or Palin or one of the others would beat him, or Perry. It says a generic Republican would beat him if the election were held today by 8 percentage points, which is to say perhaps the Republicans should run someone named Generic, because I sense that somebody named Generic would probably poll better than Romney, personally. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com.
Savage.
I understand. See, this is the problem with Orthodox religions in general, because once you unravel one rule, and I've heard this from religious men, which rules are you going to decide not to listen to? And I've heard this from religious men. They weren't arguing. They were saying, you start to unravel one rule, you may as well not respect any of them. And then you're no longer going to follow any of the rules, and you're no longer a Jew. I've heard that. If your religion says don't eat it, don't eat it. But you have to look at why and at what time that rule was written. So follow the rules that your religion teaches you. That's what I say. But you have to understand that many of the rules were written at a time when they made more sense than they do today, as far as I can tell. So it's very, and by the way, it's very complicated to start interpreting for yourself which to follow, which not to follow. It's actually easy to follow the rules because there's less thinking involved. And it's all right, I don't need it anyway. Who needed it? It's trash. I don't want it. I'm not going to miss pork. I'm not going to eat ham and eggs. I don't need it. What else? You know, I eat a shrimp. All right, so they like a shrimp sandwich. I don't eat it. I don't need it. I'm not missing anything. I don't want it. And you're probably right. I mean, shrimp today, most of it comes from Vietnam. It's not a healthful food. People use the wrong word by the way. They say healthy food. I'm not interested if the shrimp was healthy. I'm interested if it makes me. It's healthful is the word you want to use. By the way, you're talking about words. I remember learning that 20 years ago. It's a tricky word, healthy and healthful. A lot of the mistakes come from the advertising industry with adults work. Anyone who can't be a novelist becomes an advertising executive. And short of that, they go to work as a speechwriter for a politician. But anyway, you don't say this meal is healthy. You're not interested in the health of the meal. How can a meal be healthy? The meal is healthful. I mean, it's full of health. But that's neither here nor there. It's a semantic issue. What I'm saying is, if you like a shrimp, eat a shrimp. But I don't eat them anyway anymore. They're filthy, dirty little animals. They're bottom feeders. The same with calamari I talk about. I don't eat it anymore. You can't get it from Monterey. I used to eat it from Monterey, California, because the water was clean. You think I eat calamari anymore? It comes from Korea. Do you have any idea what that food is like? What kind of sea are they capturing it in, the shellfish today? And a lot of people get mad when I say it, because a lot of Italians eat the shellfish, the calamari, the this, the that. And believe me, I loved it as much as anybody. But today, where do you think it's coming from? It's not your grandfather's calamari. That's a funny line, by the way. It's not your grandfather's calamari. It's really true. I mean, when your grandfather ate calamari, maybe it didn't come from polluted water, you know, like where it comes from today, to the squid. Secondly, whatever. I don't want to go into it. But the shellfish thing is an issue to begin with. I don't eat any hard-shelled shellfish at all anymore. It's all from most of it's from Asia today. Okay, some of it comes from Boston. Do you actually want to eat something that comes from the waters of Boston where Ted Kennedy's waste? You know what I'm saying? Follow it in that way. I'm just using a metaphor. Let's say people like Ted Kennedy, their waste goes, the effluence into the bay, and then you're eating the shellfish. Can you imagine that? All the liberals in Boston, think about it, the sewage and then the shellfish. Do you actually want to eat shellfish from Boston? Think about what I just said to you. It doesn't mean that a conservative area with effluence into the beds of the seafood would be cleaner. I'm just saying, this is what they live on. They're on the bottom. It's disgusting. So it leads you, at the end of the day, what are you supposed to eat? Stella D'Oro pastries and get diabetes? Is that kosher? Do you want to hear something funny? Many years ago, I got so obsessed with this topic with regard to Jewish legal prohibitions on food that I wrote an interesting nutrition article where I said, is kosher junk food Yiddishkeit? That's for the Jewish audience that's listening now, because my argument was, I don't care what your religion is kosher junk food Yiddishkeit? In other words, you're still eating garbage. Just because someone spit on it in a factory and said that this sugary food is kosher, that means it's good for you? It doesn't mean it's good for you. It's still poison. So you have to start to use common sense at a certain point. Full moons, you get like weird. Finally figured out why people get like weird around full moons. I didn't have to look it up on the internet. I was on my deck right over the bay, looking at the moon, like staring at it, like, I always, like, I can't sleep well. You get a little extra, like, edgy. Do you know why? You know why that? It's an adaptation. Take a guess. Would you turn it off already? They can't hear me and listen to that. Do you know why you get weirded out on full moons? Because in the ancient times, in your ancient days prior to today, prior to civilization, you hunted on full moon nights because you had better light to hunt with. And so your perceptions were naturally raised during the full moon so that you could be a better, more proficient hunter. That's what I thought of last night as I stood, just me and Teddy. No, it makes sense, doesn't it? You see, at a certain point in your life, if you've spent your whole life digging and looking and trying to figure things out, you could actually answer questions that bewildered you before. And that's why I'm so good in the radio business. And that's why my audience is so loyal. In other words, I take complex questions that sometimes you can't find an answer to, and I give you an answer that makes sense. And you say, you know, that makes sense. So what would you like to talk about? You want to talk about Obama saying 80% of the American people want to raise taxes when the number is actually, what, 18%? Yeah. Open mic to Mike. Anything but a lifestyle. I don't want to do lifestyle. I may be a living legend, but I have my limits. And do you agree with me? No. I'm going to ask a question. We're going to get the hunters calling. I don't want it. I'm going to start. Once you go down that road, you're finished with the reload and they start to the calibers and reloading. You're finished. There's four things you should never talk about in radio, which I'm not going to tell you because I'll help the young people compete with me. Four topics you can't touch. End of show. I learned it the first second in radio. I'll give you a hint. No, not giving you no hints. It's not your business. Figure it out for yourself. There's no room in this business for anyone new. It's over. The field is saturated. They're laying off national hosts around the country. They're going to local people they can hire for like minimum wage. It's going back to record spinning days, like minimum wage. Do you remember what's his name? The great American actor, Clint Eastwood, in that movie, Play Misty for Me. Remember he plays a disc jockey in Monterey, California, in a small station? How cool was that one? He drove a Jaguar XK140 or 150. Remember, worked at a radio station at night, played records. That's the kind of world. That's what we're going back to again. You're going to just get stoners or alkies, drunks, just out of the can, who will take the job for minimum wage. They don't need a talk show host anymore. The idea of talent, are you kidding me? You're going to pay somebody what they're worth? No, instead we'll just have foul-mouthed vermin on HBO mouthing off against the United States of America and pay them millions of dollars a year. That's what we need in the entertainment world. Thank God. Thank God. Thank God. Thank God. We live in paradise. No, we do live in paradise. We really do. You know what I'm going to do tonight? I'm going to give you an example. My night. Do you want to know this? Is it your business what I'm going to do? What do you care what I'm going to do? I'm going to eat again. I'm becoming obsessed. It's terrible. I don't know how I don't weigh 250 pounds. I don't understand this. A guy my size, with the amount of food I eat and my obsession with food, I should weigh 100 pounds more than I do. But I burn it off with anxiety and with worry and with work. It's a tremendous diet, by the way, and I eat high carbohydrates. I'm the only one who has a PhD in nutrition who actually is on a high-carb diet. Bread. I can't get it. I love bread. Oh, do I love bread and olive oil, bread and low-fat spread. Well, I'm waiting to eat. I have to have a piece of bread. Didn't hurt my mother. She lived to 88. Where did this insanity come from? Don't you remember the story, bread is the staff of life? How do you forget the basics of health? How do people forget the basics of health and become such lunatics? And now it's a high protein and no carbohydrate. Haven't they given up on that yet? Didn't they find that it causes kidney damage? All the nitrogen in your blood needs to be eliminated by the kidneys, so people having kidney damage from the high protein diets? You need carbohydrates. Go out, have spaghetti, relax. Relax, because tomorrow may never come. What do you want to talk about? Religion? You want to do a little religion talk today? How about the prohibitions of the Bible? A little history would you like? Would you like a little? Well, let me get out my... Hold on a minute. I'm looking for my history book. You want the history of anything horrible that happened in the past? When you look at the history of the world, do you realize how lucky you are? You're living in paradise in America. I don't care what your life is. I don't care how poor you are. You're living in paradise. Take a look at what happened in the Soviet Union when the Nazis invaded Russia and they were moving towards Moscow. Do you know that they took 2.5 million Russian men prisoner? Let me repeat that for you. When the Nazis were invading Russia, on their way to Moscow, when they were less than 50 miles away from Moscow, they had encircled an entire Russian army after killing God knows how many hundreds of thousands of millions. They took 2.5 million Russian men prisoner. And they marched them back to slave labor camps. No one ever returned. So what, a few handful of men came back. The Russians lost millions of men in World War II. Millions, not tens of thousands. Millions of men. Millions of men were lost. Do you know what deprivation and starvation? Look at Stalingrad. I know it's ancient history. You don't want to know about it. But sometimes I have to remind myself and snap myself out of my own complaints, because we walk around, oh, this isn't right, that isn't right, why do I have to do this, why do I have to do that, why do I have to do this, why am I involved with this, why isn't this right, why isn't that right? Well, will you remember the perspective of where we are in the history of the world? We're living in paradise.
Savage.
Radio is not only not dead, but talk radio is very much alive. Although the midstream media has been claiming for years now that talk radio is dead, that the empty skirts who have been saying that this is a medium only for fringe extremists or old men, that talk radio is only for old men, I've proven them all wrong. Mark Masters, Talk Radio Network, and Michael Savage are partners. We've been in business together since when? 2000? Now, we all hear that the internet is the king, and a lot of people ran to the internet with their advertising money. Yet everyone knows that no one's been able to monetize their investment in the internet. Nobody. You see, talk radio is a medium that you can't hide yourself easily in. You can't hide behind a mustache and such. 3 hours a day, Jerry. 3 hours a day, Jerry. Mr. Mustache on Fox. And unless you have a massive production staff who is talking for you, you're not going to get very far, right? But I don't have a massive staff. I have a very small and very good staff. And when you do talk radio right, people get to know you. People get to understand that you're a real person, and they relate to you. What I'm saying is I've proven that talk radio is a very vibrant medium today. People who listen to talk radio are more acutely aware of what's going on than the average American. Although the fraudulent elites, or shall I say the self-proclaimed drug addicts with microphones and cameras in front of their faces, laugh at you, the average listener to talk radio is far more knowledgeable politically than they would like you to believe. And by the way, listeners to talk radio vote both with their wallets and their ballots. I got to tell you, when I wrote this thriller, I had no idea that there would be some kind of elements, there would be some elements, rather, of real life that I predicted in this novel that are happening right now. And I can't give the book away, okay? So let me go to the callers now on the Savage Nation. And I will then read to you little pieces from Abuse of Power. I'll ask you to go to my website and read the great Publisher's Weekly Review. And I'm going to ask you to prove to the liberals that they don't own the world of literature. They don't own the world of stories. And they don't own the book world, okay? You also read. I'm a conservative and I read books, so to speak. They like to think you're a knuckle dragger and only liberals read books. New York City, WOR, Chris, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, you have the best judgment of anybody in the world. If Abuse of Power was made into a movie, who would you want to play the main character? What actor?
My main character's name is Jack Hatfield. I would like Liam Neeson to be considered for the role. I'd have to see if I look, when we sell the movie rights to this book, I own them right now, and I haven't sold them. When we sell the movie rights, I'm going to make certain the contract says that I have to be involved in casting or I'm not letting anyone do the movie. As you well know, every element of a movie is very important, but casting is critical. I like Liam Neeson in the one where the daughter, you know that one where the daughter is kidnapped by Muslims and taken into a sex slave ring? Albanians, you know that one?
Taken.
What was that called? It was just on, I mean, it's an unbelievable movie. Taken. The movie was Taken. I like Liam Neeson. He's a good guy, hard-knuckled guy. He'd be good for the role. I don't know who else would be good in it. Who would you pick?
Liam Neeson's an amazing choice.
That would be one of them, but you'd have to screen test him for this particular role. He's a very tall guy, which is a deficit for this role in one regard, and I can't give away plot elements, but my character lives aboard a boat in the San Francisco area, and I don't think someone who's like 6'7" is going to basically look very good on a boat living on there with a small dog, if you know what I mean. So that's one element. He also gets smuggled into England in a certain a future scene. In order to go and track down who did this to him, he's got to get into England, but he's banned in England, my character. So he's got to smuggle himself in under some kind of disguise, and if he's too tall, he's going to stand out. So therefore, I would rule out Liam Neeson. He wouldn't be the right guy for it. I need somebody who's like in the 5'9 to 6 foot category, 5'10. And he just shouldn't be much taller than that. I need a compact fighter pilot kind of guy for this. I don't know who it would be. Arizona, Catherine, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I just wanted to know why they always make the heroine, I've just heard you talk about her, cute, adorable. You know.
Wait, talk about who? I didn't talk about a heroine.
The heroine in your book.
But when did you hear me mention it? Did you hear it in your own head? I didn't talk about a heroine.
You did a couple weeks ago. You were talking.
Oh, okay, well, it wasn't just now. Okay, so now what's the question?
Well, why are they always cute? Haven't you heard of short, fat people like me? I mean,
no,
we get away with
no, nobody would go to the movies to look at a short, fat person. I mean, God bless you, but no one wants to see a short, fat person on the screen. Let me tell you the rule about movies. You want to hear what it is? Henry B. Mayer allegedly said it. Unless a man sitting in the audience wants to think he can make love to her, she's not going to sell. He's got to look at that movie and fall in love with her. Do you understand that?
Understand that.
I'm sorry, I didn't make the rules, okay? That's the way it is. The actress on the screen has to make a man want to go to bed with her, in plain English. The actor on the screen has to have a certain gripping quality that makes every woman in the audience want to go to bed with him, whether she's not going to go to bed with him. But there has to be fantasy. A movie is fantasy, so that's how the movie business works. Now, it just happens that I have one heroine in this book, and she's a Muslim, and she looks like the King Jordan's wife. I mean, I'll read you the description of her. I can't find it, but she's gorgeous. Her name is Sarah, and she works with Jack. But I'm not going to tell you how and where and why, because I'll be giving the book away. But you have to understand that there are many Muslims who are as disgusted with the radical Islamists, if not more so than you are, because they've lost relatives to them. It's just part of my story. You wouldn't expect that from me, would you? But you have to understand I'm much different than what the left-wing media says about me, and I do see things as they really are. Okay, let me read you page 242 of Abuse of Power, London, England. It was a cardinal rule of intelligence work that Sarah had learned. If your cover has been compromised, either go deep undercover or hide in plain sight. Going to ground was not an option. Fortunately, Sarah and Jack looked a mess and stank of perspiration from the torture. Their flight, days without a shower. Any description MI6 or MI6 might have sent out barely applied to the dirty, disheveled couple who showed up for the train ride back to London. They had taken the precaution of having a drink, so their breath suggested a night of heavy partying. And they acted the part as they purchased tickets with the cash Jack had been carrying. They reached London without a hitch and cabbed to the school. The young man's name was Faisal Al-Jubeer. He couldn't have been more than 26 years old and was an inch taller than Jack, with dark skin and a thick black beard. He seemed a bit irritated as he opened the door at nearly 1 in the morning. The moment he saw Sarah, his annoyance evaporated. He didn't even seem to see Jack, not at first. "Ms. Gada," he said in surprise. "Sarah, what are you doing here?" "I'm sorry if we woke you, Faisal." "Actually, no, I was studying for..." He paused, frowning at her. Like everyone else, he saw and was mesmerized by Sarah's face. "It's a long story," she told him. "Are you all right?" "I'm fine, but I desperately need your help." He looked confused. "My help? May we come in?" He hesitated, glancing at Jack as though seeing him for the first time. Then he stepped back and opened the door wide. "Of course," he said. "Come in." "Thank you, Faisal." They stepped into a clean but modest flat full of furniture that looked as if it had come with the rental. Cheap but functional. There was a small kitchenette with a dining table in front of it, the table cluttered with books and spiral binders, illuminated by a reading lamp. It was like being in a neat version of Max's hacker friend Dave Karras's place, with one exception. Among the books was Fundamentals of Islamic Philosophy. Jack felt his gut tighten ever so slightly. Amid the clutter was a laptop computer with a screensaver showing photographs of an attractive Arab woman and three small boys. "Faisal, this is my friend Jack." "Assalamu alaikum," Faisal said, and they shook hands, each man assessing the other. Jack wanted to trust him and fighting the sense that he shouldn't. He supposed it all boiled down to whether or not this young man's idea of Islamic philosophy was similar to Al-Fida's and included killing in the name of Allah. Sarah had assured Jack that Faisal wasn't a radical, but then Sarah herself had spent nearly a year pretending to be something she wasn't, as had Abdal and God knew how many others. Jack was still trying to adjust to the fact that there was a president of the United States with a middle name Hussein. Who was to say this guy wasn't pretending as well? Faisal gestured to the sofa. "Sit, please. Now, let me pause. You've got to understand I'm a very political man, so even my fiction is somewhat political." Faisal gestured to the sofa. "Sit, please." They sat and Faisal took a chair opposite them. Sarah leaned forward, and she explains to him what he wants him to do. He's a computer expert, okay? And she says to him, "Look, we have to be truthful with each other." "Yes, of course, Islam teaches us to strive always to excel in virtue and truth, but you're starting to frighten me." "It's a frightening world," Jack said unhelpfully, but it had to be said. Everyone was a soldier for one side or the other, whether they liked it or not. Sarah reached into her pocket and pulled out the USB key. "This," she told him, "there are some encrypted emails on it that I'm hoping you can crack." "Me? I know how talented you are, Faisal. I know you've helped some of the teachers with their computers, other students, and I know codes are one of your hobbies. I remember it from the essay in your application packet." He shrugged. "I know a few things." He looked at the key suspiciously. "Who do these emails belong to?" Sarah fixed those beautiful but firm eyes on the young man. "Have you ever heard of a group called the Hand of Allah?" His expression became restless, anxious. It was obvious he had. "Now you truly are frightening me. Why are you involved in? What are you involved in?" "Trying to stop them," she said frankly. Jack was watching the young man's face carefully. Nothing changed. That was a good sign. There was no, "Aha, I've got you, you've fallen into a Hand of Allah trap." "We believe the emails come from a member of that group," Sarah went on, "someone high within the Home Secretary's office." "What?" Faisal exclaimed. "That's absurd, and why would you have them? And I'm not going to give you the plot away." And then there's a long dialogue coming up in the midst of the plot between Jack and Faisal, the Muslim who eventually helps them. And it's a very interesting dialogue that I will read you shortly on the Savage Nation so you get a full picture of the genius of Michael Savage. I've just read From Abuse of Power. You can go to michaelsavage.com or you can go right to Amazon and you could show the world that you do read fiction.
Savage.
Out that we've gone through the toughest economic situation that we've seen since the Great Depression. I think the vast majority of people understand that this is something that we inherited. When I came into office, we had already lost 4 million jobs, and in the few months after I got sworn in, we lost another 4 million.
Well, sounds like more neo-Marxist liberalism to me. Play the clip.
We have to raise the debt ceiling so that we preserve the full faith and credit of the United States of America. But we also have to solve the underlying problem, which is we've been spending more money than we've been taking in. What I think the American people want to know is that there's a game plan for the future. What people want to know is that we're moving in the right direction, even if they're frustrated about how fast we're moving. We need to speed it up, but I think the trajectory is a good one.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199, 800-255-4199, or go to americaisrising.com, 800-255-4199, americaisrising.com. So before I go and take some more calls, which I don't really want to do right now, I want to read you another passage from Abuse of Power. If I could find the page, I don't know if I can. I really can't. I lost it. Remember, he's talking with the Muslim in England who's going to help him. Well, they have an argument about radical Islam. I wish to God I could find it. Here it is. Is this? Here it is. I got it. Okay, so they go to London, him and the beautiful Sarah, the Muslim woman who is helping Jack Hatfield in my novel, Abuse of Power. And he says to him, we really do need your help, Faisal, Sarah goes on. The hand of Allah is planning an attack, a massive one, and that can only be bad for all of us. Not just Muslims, Jack added, but we're talking about the future of Western civilization here, your own son's future. Faisal looked torn. Jack wasn't sure whether he'd help or kick them out. Apparently, Faisal wasn't sure either, but then he took the USB key from Sarah and got to his feet, moved to his laptop on the table. And then I'm not going to give you the plot details. Later on, Sarah is asleep on the sofa. Jack slumps in the armchair across from her, only half awake when Faisal said, I know who you are, you know. That got Jack's attention. He pulled himself upright, unsure what to expect. Faisal sat at the dining table reading one of his textbooks. A clock on the wall said it was approaching 2 a.m. The decryption software had been running on the laptop for close to an hour, numbers and symbols skittering across its screen. Faisal looked up from his book. It took me a while to remember you. I saw your photograph in the newspaper some time ago. There was an article about the Home Secretary banning you from travel to this country. You're an American television host. Jack shrugged. Close enough. I remember because we talked about you at the college, about the things you've said, your hatred of Muslims, your desire to kill 100 million of us. Jack didn't like the direction this was heading. That was taken completely out of context. I don't hate all Muslims. Just a few, then? It was an accusation, not a question. I saw the mistrust in your eyes when you first looked at me. You have to understand my perspective, Jack said. There are a lot of radicals out there, like the Hand of Allah, people who would want to destroy America. Yes, and that's why I agree to help you and Sarah. But don't you see that when you say such hateful things, it makes men like me feel as if you're talking about us as well? I understand, but it's a very delicate balance. And I'm sure you have even more to fear from radicals than I do. You're 100% right about that, said the Muslim who's helping them. He was quiet a moment as he closed his book and stared at the laptop, watching the software do its magic. Then he said, but it isn't just the radicals. My mother is Indian and my father is Pakistani, and our extended family is a mix of many different beliefs. Some are liberal Muslims, and they may be the worst curse there is. Worse than those who want to kill people, bomb them? I don't condone such actions, and I never will, but the liberals are nearly as dangerous in their own way. People who think that pornography and degeneracy and gay marriage are normal, acceptable. To my mind, that's a bigger threat to the stability of Pakistan and the world than anyone can imagine. Jack relaxed a bit and had to stifle a smile. He almost felt as if he were in a bar back home, talking American politics with Tony or the Reb. When I'm not at school, Faisal said, I work in a mobile phone store. There's another man who works there, a fundamentalist Christian, and we've had many conversations about our beliefs. And when it comes to social values, family values, we're in total accord. We agree on almost everything with regard to how life should be led. The laptop beeped and he checked the screen and then typed in a quick entry and started running it again. I'm reading from Abuse of Power by Michael Savage. The point I'm trying to make to you, he said, is that there are many varieties of Muslim, just as there are Catholics or Jews. There are Muslims who are not religious, yet use Islam as a political weapon. They have no interest in following the teachings, yet they're willing to kill for their own self-advancement. Do you realize that in some of our Muslim schools right here in England, They're teaching young students how to properly chop off the hands of thieves? You're kidding me, said Jack. I wish I were. It's right there in their textbooks. He paused, clearly disturbed by the thought. But there are other Muslims like me who are very religious, yet have no taste for violence, no desire to harm anyone. While I may detest what the liberals believe and think that their view of society is dangerous, I don't want to hurt or convert them. I simply want to be left alone, he said. There are many of us who feel that way. And how do you feel when one of those radicals sets off a bomb? Asked Jack. Just as frightened as you do, just as terrified, he paused. Why wouldn't I be? Point taken, Jack said. What I want to stress to you is that when you go on television and speak of Muslims, you should be very careful to separate us, not lump us all together. Well, that's true, but this isn't one-sided, you know. How do you think it feels when Americans are all seen as infidels? Well, those who say such things aren't speaking for me, Faisal told him. All I really want is peace throughout the world. That's all any true Muslim wants. We believe in the blessed words of all the prophets, from Moses to Jesus. We respect others and their religions, and all we ask is that they do the same in return. Jack knew all of this, of course, but it didn't hurt to have a face to attach to it. He had stereotyped Faisal, mistrusted him, the moment he'd walked in the door, and he regretted that. Well, that's good to hear, Jack said, and you're right, I will be more careful. Faisal nodded, satisfied to have had his say. He rose from his chair and gestured to the laptop. This will take some time, and I need to sleep. I'll check its progress in the morning. Thank you, Faisal. I know you didn't have to help us, and I appreciate what you're doing. Faisal gestured to Sarah, stretched out on the sofa. She looks comfortable there, but you can't sleep in that chair. I have a spare bedroom for when my family arrives. There's a bed. You're free to use it. Then he stepped into the hallway and disappeared. That's abuse of power. Michael Savage. Go to my website and order it. The next scene is a sex scene. Sure to blow the socks off everyone in the United States of America.
Savage.